And welcome back to Coast. In a moment, Dr. Bart Kosko will take your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Dr. Bart Kosko. Bart, you won a Best Paper Award for some mathematical results on fuzzy logic. Tell me about that. Are you there? Nope. Bobo, you'll need to call him back, and let's get him back on, and we will do that. And, of course, we've got calls, and we've got some truck driver calls, too. As we're talking about artificial intelligence and remote driving in trucks, let's go to Kendall, South Dakota truck driver. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kendall.
Yeah, I think the autonomous trucks are unavoidable. I've been paying a lot of attention to this. The big problem they're having with it is the who to kill question. That's about the one thing the computer can't do. Like if there's going to be an accident, like a few years ago, I came around a curve and a car had hit a guardrail. The driver was thrown out, and a carload of high school kids had got out and were looking at him, and I had a fraction of a second to decide who I'm going to run over.
Oh, my God.
That's what the computer can't do right now.
You're exactly right. But you think it's coming. It's going to happen?
I'm 55 years old. I would be very severely surprised if I retire as a truck driver. It comes down to the economics of it. If the autonomous, the driver's the most expensive part, most expensive thing for a trucking company. So there's a company out there, it's called Startsky. They make autonomous trucks, level 5 autonomous trucks, and they have another company they call Hutch. So it's an add-on package to the autonomous trucks. It makes it so the truck will book its own freight, schedule its own maintenance.
Amazing.
You basically turn this thing loose for 500,000 miles. It books its own freight, does its own maintenance. It comes back, you take all the autonomous parts off, put them on a different truck, send it back out for another 500,000 miles.
Who loads and who unloads when it comes to that, Kendall?
The shippers and receivers. They'll need to hire people to fuel them and do pre-trips inspections on them. You'll still have mechanics. You'll still have people doing, the billing and stuff in the office, but you'd get rid of the HR department. You'd get rid of the dispatchers. You'd get rid of the drivers. It would cut payroll in a trucking company down to a handful of people could run, 500-600 trucks.
It's crazy times. Kendall, drive carefully and keep driving as long as you can. We've got Dr. Bart Kosko back with us. Bart, we were talking with Kendall. He's a truck driver, and he thinks it's happening. It's going to happen.
Well, some of that's happening, George, but I think the first order, it's decision support systems. But the crucial skills of the driver, that deep intuition, I don't think that's going to be replaced. I think they'll be enhanced. So, for example, remember the old Peckinpah movie, Convoy?
Yeah.
Just the concept of truck convoys. Maybe not his best movie, but the concept. You can imagine almost like a wagon train where you had the experts at the front of the wagon train in the back, two really skilled truck drivers with a fleet of trucks. Managing the platoon instead of just being completely autonomous, because that's where the real efficiency is, several groups of trucks at once coming through. I just don't buy the argument, at least on modern freeways, for a long time that you could turn loose autonomous.
Well, I agree. I agree.
On a military base, for example, or throughout the country, through the back roads, you could imagine platoons of those going, and with, in effect, everyone as a shepherd or wagon master at the front and back, controlling that, I think that would work.
Tell us about this Best Paper Award you got for mathematical results on fuzzy logic.
Yeah, it's a good thing to happen when you're 61 years old. Well, the question, George, is when we make a neural network deeper and have more layers, give it more power, how do we understand what it has learned and what has it forgotten when it's learned new things? It's known as the black box problem because they're just big black boxes. How do we have an audit trail? Why did it make the decision? There's no rules in there. And worse, in many ways, it spits out an answer, but it doesn't tell you how confident the system is in the answer. So something called XAI, or explainable AI, we've been working on, and it's helped bring back fuzzy logic, which was recently doodled by Google on November 30th. They put a fuzzy logic doodle in there. You might check that. And this is a way of using rules. It's kind of like the old AI systems, but those old AI systems were binary rules and too hard to lay out. These we can infer, but a small number of them, and they correspond to probabilities. The way I would put it is this, that if I think of the neural system as it trains and learns from experience, like a truck driver, a neural truck driver, and it would be like you can imagine a car headed towards a target destination. And I was able to show that there's a kind of a cloud above the car, a probability cloud, whose average equals the car. And so as the car goes to its destination, you have a sequence of clouds going to its destination. And then there's a lot more information in the cloud than there turns out to be in the car itself. I know it's abstract. It's on my webpage if you want to read it, but that's the best metaphor I can come up with. But what the great thing about it was it's completely mathematical. In other words, it may have some practical applications down the road, but it was a pure result. And those are hard to come up with, that combines modern probability theory with fuzzy logic, thinking in shades of gray, to give a sense. What we do, George, we take the neural network and we translate it into a rule-based system. And then when we stimulate it, ask it questions, the neural network gives us an answer. We want to know, well, which of the rules fired, how much, this sort of thing. We can now completely give that description. That's all part of that cloud that I mentioned.
I love it. Carl in Boston, welcome to the program, Carl. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you, George. Thank you for taking my call.
And sure.
Dr. Costco, I'm fascinated by what you've been talking about. I have a two-part question about nanoblood and about the chip.
Okay.
With the nanoblood, and say if there are nanobots in these vaccines or however they're infiltrating the body, would it be possible to find a way to hack the chip if it were to be implanted, or would it have an effect on it, like MK Ultra or anything like that? And now I'll take my answers. Thank you.
Answer your question. Those chips are hackable, but this is where blockchain comes to the rescue, Carl. And blockchain is a kind of big public ledger. I just watched again the Christmas Carol and Bob Cratchit filling out those private ledgers. And it's done in a way that it has immense combinatorial complexity. Anyway, the effect of that is it's not easy to hack, and it won't be easy to hack into that. So to the extent we go the Internet of Things, and to the extent we can use blockchain, like you saw introduced in Bitcoin, but it's available in many other forms now, that, I think, should give us something that's maybe not unhackable, but you would need a quantum supercomputer to hack a lot of that. That's hopefully where we're headed with that. At first, though, the chips are quite naive, can be hackable, manipulated, in, I think, in a straightforward way.
I mean, some cars right now can be hacked from a distance, right, while you're driving.
Sure.
Because of the chips.
Your car is studded with chips in just an overall electrical control system. It's really not designed, I think, to be unhackable. That will come. There's a lot of problems that go into designing a car. But the blockchain breakthrough, George, is much bigger than people realize, I think. It's not just that it facilitates Bitcoin. It did that. That itself is an amazing thing, if you look at it. There's over, as you know, over 100 cryptocurrencies now, and it's not a cryptocurrency technology. It's based on something from my colleague Ralph Merkel called a Merkel hash tree, and something Ralph did in his PhD thesis in electrical engineering at Stanford many, many years ago in public key encryption. And to the extent we can make that more tractable and more available, I think things will be safer. We're going to go through a very bad period, though, before we have that. And I think it'll be consumer demand and ultimately companies supplying that. But in the interim, we're vulnerable, and we're exposing through chips. And just, again, the Internet of Things, like the components of your house and your car, so many ways for our lives to be manipulated in just fundamental errors. But I think there's a lot of bad actors out there.
Let's go next to Matt, truck driving in Ohio. Hello, Matt.
Hello, gentlemen. Good morning.
Right.
One question for you. What do you think would happen with these autonomous trucks during a catastrophic failure, ergo, you know, blowing the tire, or having, you know, some kind of mechanical failure?
That will be a huge problem. Mechanical failures, blowing tires, nobody around to fix it. What do you do?
That's a problem, George. But at the same time, if you have a lot more sensors in the car, right now we're in effect relying on the trucker's skills, his or her intuition to detect a tire that needs air, that sort of thing. More sensors in the vehicle will give more early alerts. We already have special braking systems in even ordinary cars.
Well, what if he hits like a big...
But when it goes wrong at high speed, it really goes wrong.
Exactly.
And you're talking about a transition to chaos. This is like If you think a cigarette or cigar smoke, it starts off nice and smooth, then it goes turbulent. It's the turbulent part that we still can't really predict. And that's what happens at a high-speed impact crash.
Well, and if he hits like a spike in the road, he's going to get no warning. The sensors won't know about that until it happens.
And hopefully can make a few adjustments. So, for example, if you have the spike in the road and part of the truck goes out, the human may not have experienced a problem like that before. And the training, the simulation-type training of the truck may well have experienced that. So since it's operating more, like I talked about, on nano time, it might well be able to institute commands to moderate the accident that a human wouldn't be able to. In fact, a human, if he'd never experienced before, George, actually could make it worse.
Let's go to first-time caller.
Take a while.
Michelle's with us in California. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what would the nano blood do to people with Alzheimer's?
You know, we're not sure what Alzheimer is. One recent theory I heard is that it's a form of gingivitis. As you get older, it gets in the bloodstream and colonizes the brain. The brain responds with these plaques. But we don't know. But I think that these answers to whatever brain damage you have or limitations due to plaques or anything else, you have a lot of the brain is involved, obviously, in oxygen processing and things like that. And the cleaning of clutter from the endothelium, from the wall of the arteries and the veins, it would, I think, assist in that to a big way. So maybe it could give you slightly younger arteries. There's a lot of, you know, experimental supplements right now trying to do that kind of thing. But it'd be nice to have a device kind of constantly going around and scraping off plaque. And a lot of that plaque is made of calcium. I think up to a third of it is. And it gets worse with age. It could, in theory, detect that. In effect, versions of the nano blood would act like very smart white blood cells. The trouble is now the white blood cells kind of get, in effect, confused, and they fall into cracks and eating these small LDL particles, and you get plaque. So I think it could help the aging brain.
Well, we know our blood is made with our bone marrow. I wonder if they will do something artificial with bone marrow. What do you think, Bart?
You'd have to do that. You'd want to do that to keep it, you know, you create and destroy blood cells all the time precisely that way. I would just say this, George, as with something like nano blood, I think it's inevitable, the trucks we're talking about, you just don't want to go first. you want to be about 10 iterations down the road on that, because it'll take a while. But next, it's inevitable.
It is. Let's go to Jen in Delaware. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jen.
Hey, George. This may sound off subject, but they're already worshiping AI at a church called Way of the Future. So my suspicion is true that AI will prove to be the image of the beast. And that's idol worship, and God does not like idol worship.
There are some people, Bart, that believe that the image of the beast that's in the Bible could be chips, could be artificial intelligence. What do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, it simply because AI is too broad. It can certainly be used for that kind of thing. What was it, Way of the Future? Isn't that the last line from The Aviator, the movie about Howard Hughes? Maybe that's what
with DiCaprio,
on.
Right?
Exactly. He said that it's a very effective ending, actually, very clever. So I don't know about that, George. I don't see that per se. On the other hand, we do have an increasingly secular society. But to take my novel Nano Time, where, as I said, the main character ends up getting debrained and his brain replaced by a chip against his will, I might point out. And rather than that being the worst thing in the world, it's a great thing in the world. And he starts off like most of us would with the equivalent of the Roman orgy feasting and all the sensory stuff. But he actually ends up, and it's in the book, in a spiritual way, a kind of spirituality like the young Buddha experienced after going through all the wealth and the revelry. He was a prince in India. And then realized there's just got to be more to the world than that. And so I think you'll see that. I think you'll may see new types of religions that come, and we get away from daily sensory processing. But I don't think it's as broad-brushed as the beast or non-beast.
Next up, we've got David, truck driving in Nebraska, with us. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, I've got the driver assist in this truck that I drive, and it's where I can take my hands off the wheel, and it'll keep it between the lines and whatnot. It'll tell me to put my hands back on the wheel. But there's things on this thing that I I keep the switches shut off. That way it doesn't, because like when I get close to a line and so forth, get close to the white line, if I don't shut those switches off, this thing will jerk, try to jerk me back over into the center of the lane. Or like if I'm taking a right curve and I'm in the middle lane and there's a car or there's a guardrail on my right side of this, the alarms will go off on this thing. To me, if you're going to make this driverless, well, there's other things too. Because, I mean, it'll pick up shadows and it'll try to shut my truck off, shut my truck down. It's like you try to emergency braking system or something. So it'll see a shadow of a bridge and it'll try to shut it down. So if you're going to try to make this driverless, they're going to have to go a long way on that. Because on this here, to me, was it doing like that, it wouldn't be able to detect black ice or even a thin layer of ice when I'm getting close to that right white line or something, and it jerks my steering wheel like it does, or like when that alarm goes off when I'm curving to the right, or it picks up a shadow. Them are all things that the humans got to be able to correct.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
And David, if you were in a car, David, and a driverless truck was behind you, would you freak out?
Yeah, with the way this truck acts that I drive, yeah.
I don't blame you.
I wouldn't like it at all.
I don't blame you at all. I what I don't hear right now, Bart, is the public outcry about this.
Yeah, you will when the accidents happen. But let me just say, George, we have a smart system to take it from 97% accurate to 99% is real hard to do. To go from 99% accurate, David's a 99.999% accurate person, but to go from 99.0 to 99.9 accurate takes a tremendous amount of feedback error correction. It's just the sort of thing David's talking about. These more rare events, and he's detecting an error. We have to correct that with extensive training. But in theory, with enough sampling and running it long enough and combining the results of truck drivers worldwide, not just one or two, we'll get that down and we'll get it up ultimately to 99, to 99.9. But that's real hard to do, and that's what you need before you can turn this loose.
Have you ever come up to a trailer in a high wind? Those things swerve all over the place.
I do it all the time on the intersection of I-15 and the 210 freeway.
You need a great driver to handle that. I'm not sure a driverless truck could handle something like that.
Not today they can.
No, absolutely not. Bart, where do people get your books?
You can get them online at Amazon. There's links available at my webpage and elsewhere online.
And we've got your website all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to take a break in a moment and come back with final calls with Bart Costco. How did you get involved in all of this, Bart?
You know, a physics teacher of mine in high school gave me a copy of Carl Sagan's book, The Dragons of Eden, Speculations and Origins of Intelligence. And that really got me thinking about how the brain works. And as a philosophy student, and really philosophy is about this kind of thing, philosophy of mind, and just general curiosity. It was an odd transition, George, from music to math, but I made it, and I'm a student still.
And music is a little mathematical, isn't it?
Completely mathematical. What you're listening to with music is the unfolding of a differential equation.
Absolutely. We'll be back in a moment. Dr. Bart Costco with us. A couple of his books, again, include Cool Earth, Nanotime, Noise, Heaven and a Chip, Fuzzy Thinking, the website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Thanks to all you truck drivers who've been calling the program, telling us how you feel about driverless trucks. And we've got more to come when we come back with Dr. Bart Costco on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we're going to talk about the zombie apocalypse with investigative reporter Cheryl Jones, followed by Open Lines with Cheryl. I'll join in, too. So we got a lot coming up on Coast to Coast. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Bart Costco and take final calls as well. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Dr. Bart Costco. We're back with final calls. Bart, of everything we've talked about so far, what is the one thing that scares you?
I'm worried about the privacy in our chips and in general in our digital communications. We don't have, as I said, the third-party doctrine overturned yet. So every time you communicate digitally, you're in effect, according to the law, you're abandoning that information. It's an absurdity. Obviously, that's important information. I'm very worried about that. And the related power that comes from the big tech companies and just the globalization of those tech companies and the ability to control everything we think and do. I think things are happening at such a rapid clip. Things are so politicized that we need to take a big step back in a nonpartisan way, rethink this move from paper world to digital world, and really rethink, George, it has to be done, the laws like the Communication Decency Act, Section 230 privileges that my USC colleague Chris Cox designed in a different way in the mid-1990s, the way it's used by companies like Google and Facebook to shield them from any kind of tort liability. No one else in the world has that kind of protection. Maybe Chinese Communist Party does.
Or the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, maybe some of that, but not to the extent that they do. And it has to do with how you read the text. And it was set up with good intentions, but it does require good faith operations. And so you have that on the one hand. We'll be looking at, I think, related to that, is just the effect of monopolization of big tech companies rising up. And whoever goes first in technology, like who designs the first keyboard or the first set of railroad tracks, gets an undue advantage. We have to work all that out. And we're going through these growing pains. The trouble is that while that's happening, we have Moore's Law and exponential growth in digital technology. We really haven't had time legally, culturally, morally to adapt to this. That's what worries me.
Let's go back to the calls. Carlos in San Francisco. Hello, Carlos.
Hello, and Happy New Year to all, to you, George, and my compliments to your call screener, Aaron.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for your guest. And given that your guest has a background in music and an appreciation for philosophy, I think he might appreciate the philosophical, ethical implications of the question that I'm going to ask. So I'll preface my question by saying this, is that we have had over our human history great works that inspire, you know, a better form of humanity in art, in literature, in music. And this is also as a result of people's own suffering, like such as with depression, Van Gogh, for example. And so had these people been able to have a way to be alleviated from whatever memories that resulted or culminated in the depressive state that was expressed in these works that benefited humanity in so many ways. So the ethical component to the question is this, to your guest, Dr. Cusco, is there a way, or do you envision this type of technology being utilized to enable the editorialization or eradication of memory that may relate to trauma, which could ultimately manifest in a depressive state? Hence, if someone were to benefit in that way, then we may not, as a society, realize what their depressive state may have enabled them to produce in terms of some kind of prolific insight. So there's a two-part question. There's an ethic component.
A big essay question. Let me just take that if I can. But there's an old saying in art that the great benefactors of art have been poverty and misery. So I think you're onto something. Without the kind of suffering, emotional, financial, and others that the great artists have gone through, you wouldn't have gotten a great art. I mean, after all, how many times have you seen a great artist and later in life make a lot of money and then continue to produce great art? It happens, but not very often. So that's a good question as we try to automate art. In my book, Heaven and Ship, I have a whole chapter on smart art and how to extend that. But that's something, that ability to dance on the razor's edge, which the artist or a comedian like George Carlin, you know, you can go right down the line, that's something we certainly haven't come close to doing. On the other hand, I've mentioned before my colleague, Professor Toivo Kohonen in Finland, who took Bach 2 and 3-part inventions for two hands or three hands on the piano and trained simple automata back in the late 80s to produce music for our neural conferences that kind of sounded like Bach. Now, it wasn't maybe the result of a tortured Bach, you know, and produced something wonderful, but that's a big deal. If I could just say one more thing, George, I trained, sure. I had a great advantage as a freshman. I was a music scholarship student, composition at USC, with the film composer David Raxon. I don't know if you remember the movie Laura, the famous film noir.
I do not.
The guy falls in love with the dead girl. It's a great, and David, that's his most famous score, but he often told the story that when he got the assignment to score the film, I think he was working with Daryl Zanuck, that he had just been dumped by someone he was very much in love with. So he said he just sat down at the piano, put the love letter or the Dear John letter, Dear David letter, up on the piano, and out pours this wonderful theme that you can still hear. So we haven't come close to replicating that kind of thing.
And Carlos, I believe you had a second question. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so the question is does he see this technology, and thank you for getting me back, George.
Sure.
Does Dr. Kuska, do you see the technology where it can be used to somehow mediate trauma memories, such as editorializing memories as a practical matter?
I think yes, in the long term. That's a tough question, though, because
he could wipe out all memory, couldn't it, Bart?
Right. But trauma, you know, it takes really fine psychiatrists, you know, years of experience to work with patients over a long period of time. But the first thing, Carlos, I think of when I hear that is I take someone who's done that for many, many years. There's a lot of every great hospital or university has folks like that. They could probably train a system that could at least encode a lot of what they've learned. And when you do enough of that with enough of these therapists, I think you'd start to come up with maybe not an off-the-shelf device, but something to first order would help, and it would only improve with time with further training. This is what happens. Every time a great trained brain, a great physician, a great surgeon dies, we lose all that. We don't want to do it. We want to back it up. We want to capture it, like I mentioned, in effect in a form of rules, that cloud I was talking about in the fuzzy logic case, and we want to combine it with the other clouds and over time successfully get something smarter till some point, ideally, we would come up with a therapist that's better than any of the therapists we use to train on.
East of the Rockies, we're going out to Texas. Willie's truck driving. Hello, Willie.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Okay.
Close listeners.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I got a question in my comment. They've been saying about the autonomous trucks for their running. I have seen them on the road running between Phoenix and Tucson.
Oh, boy.
Santa Rosa, New Mexico. To Albuquerque. Now they're running them from Houston to Dallas back and forth. So has your guest, has he ever heard about them platooning the trucks from L.A. to Jacksonville? That was a big deal on the Trucking Channel for a while, and they ran some test from Jacksonville to L.A.
They're pretty,
yeah, I haven't
they're
heard
pretty
of it,
quiet
I
about
say,
it.
Given that in 1993, in July of 93, as I mentioned, I was involved in a platoon experiment. Not a military platoon, but a smart car platoon on the I-15 freeway. So, you know, this many years, almost three decades later, I'm not surprised. If it were maybe at night, off and on, some experiment, that's, I think you're talking about the 10 freeway, which is the longest east-west freeway in the country. I would be very surprised if that were done during daylight hours.
You think they would do it because of less traffic or because of less visibility of people seeing this stuff?
I think less traffic. I think just far fewer. I mean, they would like to have the daylight, but it's just hard for me to, having driven much of that myself, a lot of it's straight, and you know, you can go pretty fast, and I've often put it on automatic, but it's just the risk there is so great, the risk of accident, the downstream liability. I don't know, but I have not looked at that recently. It'd be interesting to see if it's true.
Chris is with us, Clearwater, Florida. Hello, Chris.
Hi, you know, with the 5G towers being spaced no further apart than every 200 meters, it's
right.
not just bringing the web to the country is one reason they give, but also for faster response time are the lame excuses for 5G with its microwaves of even higher and more harmful frequencies than the previous cellular generations and the ensuing health issues like neurological and mental and heart issues. But plus, what would happen if the network goes down? Can't the vehicles drive themselves? And there's studies that show these microwaves and certain frequencies increase the permeability of cell membranes to be more vulnerable to all kinds of infections, bacterial, viral. There's a study from September 29th this year, 2021, evidence of a connection between coronavirus disease 19 and exposure to radio frequency radiation from wireless communications, including 5G, that's published in the Journal of Clinical Translational Research by Beverly Rubik. But you know, the question, who to kill? Everyone. Suicide in slow motion on the installment plan. And then you have Airbus and Boeing, recent news, they're saying that their planes' radio altimeters that allows the pilots to land in low visibility, depends on radio signals to gauge their altitude, would become dangerous, if not impossible, that Russia Today is reporting on. So, rather than nanobots, how about nutrients that we all need, actually, to keep us alive, to help clear our blood vessels, like L-proline, L-lysine, vitamin C, silica, finding things like food-grade diatomaceous earth, bamboo extract, horsetail, oat straw, nettle leaves, seaweeds. And, I like to get it from diatomaceous earth. So those are things that we can keep our blood vessels clear with rather than something foreign.
Bart, he's a pretty spot on these things.
Yeah, a lot of points there. I take a supplement myself that's been subject to double-blind experiments to get younger blood vessels. But with respect to the 5G and the effect that can have on you, I think that's a tough question. I don't think we know the answer to that. In my book, Noise, I talk about the earlier limited data we have on what about holding a smartphone to your ear. And there was some results out of Sweden on that. We haven't had the kind of controlled studies you like to have, partly because the technology changes so fast and it's difficult getting it approved. But there is an issue there as you increase the frequency. That's the basic rule of quantum mechanics. The energy is directly proportional, H nu is the equation, is directly proportional to it. And we just don't know. These are downstream effects. You can have what are called stochastic resonance effects, where that kind of background electromagnetic intense energy could boost an on-off threshold. There had been some evidence of that in Sweden. But we really don't know. I'm a little surprised at the speed with which 5G has proceeded, given the potential health effects. Maybe completely benign, but, George, it's very difficult coming up with an all-clear signal with the new technology. And it just doesn't seem to me like they put enough time into it.
And then these airplane warnings are pretty darn serious, Bart.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Let's go to Dennis in Vacaville, California. Hey, Dennis, go ahead.
Hi, I was just wondering if, is this like a drone plane that has a pilot in a different country flying a pilotless plane? In other words, is there a driver of the truck?
Well, that's a good question. Is there a driver of the truck somewhere who's monitoring this through technology, or is it strictly on its own, Bart?
Well, the experiments that I was involved with through Caltrans in California, we always had someone in a backup car who was a remote driver or could take over the controls. Yeah, fully autonomous, I think, is not in the cards. So it'd be something like that, someone, in effect, a joystick holder, they call it. You could have, and that's what I was suggesting, to manage a platoon. You might well want to have one at the start and the back of it, like in the old wagon train. But eventually, in theory, if the roads had enough sensors in them and the machines had been tested long enough, you might be able to have some you could turn loose. But, man, that's, again, on modern freeway traffic, which takes the best and the worst of human nature and our notions of agency, I just don't think we're anywhere near turning that loose.
Well, plus, if you're going to put a guy in a car behind the truck, why just not put the driver in the truck?
Right, but maybe if you had five trucks in a row or 10 of them.
I see, and he's controlling all of them.
Yes.
Boy, he better be sharp. If he falls asleep, look out.
Let's go. I think you went two, one in the front, one in the back.
Let's go to Jerry, truck driving in Wisconsin. Hi, Jerry, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Okay.
Good. I just got to, about the autonomous trucks. Obviously, there's lawsuits out here every day. You know, I mean, I always got to watch my, dot my I's and cross my T's, you know what I mean, when you're driving a truck. And, are they going to be, exempt from lawsuits, let's say?
That's a good
right
question.
Away, well, it wasn't the truck's fault. It was the car's fault, you know?
And you can't sue the company. Would they exempt companies like that, Bart?
Now, maybe it's some rare case, a military convoy of something, you know, but I don't think so in general, George. Yeah, we really want to have in our common law system the sort of legal Damocles hanging over your head for tort liability. If it weren't for that, your products wouldn't be nearly as safe, your vehicles nearly as safe, so I don't think so.
What's your new project?
You'd be fully liable for the foreseeable harm that your autonomous vehicles cause.
And what's your new project you're working on?
Well, part of it I can't tell you, but one thing I'm doing, George, is trying to make these deep neural networks deeper and at the same time translate them into something that we can understand, that cloud I mentioned.
All right, my friend. Come back again. Have a great Happy New Year and a great 2022. Dr. Bart Costco with us. Up next, our investigative reporter Cheryl Jones, as we talk about a zombie apocalypse.